Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start the podcast, I have a Discord channel. You can hit the link in the description. We talk about all fun things, music, all things podcast, like literally everything. I released free music on there, merch, you get that before anybody else, blah blah blah. So podcast time. Oh, also, if you don't subscribe, please hit subscribe, helps the podcast. Love you lots. Podcast time. I this week on the show is the one and only James Haskell. I've had James Haskell on the podcast before, when in the early days when we first started talking. James was a professional rugby player, played for England, played for Lions, and is a fucking beast on the rugby pitch. He got into DJing and producing. We got talking, cut a long story short, and have a lot of conversations and hangouts. We wrote a record together. The record is coming, it's actually out now on the on my record label. It's called Keep On. Yeah, I really like James a lot. I've got a lot of time from him, and he is a very good guy. His work ethic is just next to nothing compared to anybody else. He just constantly works and is just always very nice with it. He can talk the hind legs off a donkey, and I love that. And the thing that comes out of his mouth is all really positive advice, but not like bullshit advice. It's advice that he's working with in his own life, and yeah, I really like talking to him. He's a good mate of mine, and I'm lucky to call him a good mate of mine now. So I thought I'd get him on, talk a little bit about the record, talk a little bit about his life, and how things have progressed for him. So without further ado, James Haskell. Mr. James Haskell, what is cooking, man?
How are you, sir? It's great to be back on here.
I know, mate. Thanks for doing it second time round.
I'd love to. Well, we've got some exciting stuff to talk about, haven't we? And my journey has moved on a lot since we were on here last time, where I'm still a pretender to the throne, but I'm having a good old go at it, you know.
Are your nails painted?
I'm always painting my toenails. My toenails are painted gold at the moment. And I've done this since I was 24, because people always trod on my feet, and men's feet are hanging, so both my feet are tattooed, and I got a pedicure, so I got a little gold nail polish on. And then when I was trying to decide what color I wanted, I tried like fluorescent pink, orange and gold, and I had three fingers painted. I quite liked it, and everyone was asking about it. So then the woman said, do you want me to do it properly? So she gave me a manicure and then painted my hands with orange, and that came off, so I then painted them with blue. now it's all chipped. So yeah,
looks great, mate. I love
thank
it
thank you I love thank it. You conversation I, starter
I know right I know how's life
yeah life's good busy, you know. I've become a dad since we were on the podcast last
has it
time.
Been that long?
Yeah, it's been a long time, because I don't know what episode it was, but it's been a while, man. So
that's crazy.
So yeah, so I've got a baby called Bodie. She's not a baby anymore. She's a proper toddler, and she has changed the game on every front. She's kind of taught me to love in a completely different way that I didn't know was possible, and has kind of made me, understand what our real love is, and like that kind of, you can never understand why parents are the way they are until you actually have one. And then, so that's been interesting.
How's that changed your aspect on your career, as in, like, especially music career? Like, how has it changed the view on it all?
I think this is one of the things I've sort of been going through with myself, really, because you've obviously got to be, I'm quite selfish. I've always been quite career driven. I've always hustled, made things happen. If it didn't happen, I'd always pursue them.
Yeah.
And I think when you have a child, you now got something that's dependent on you, and you have to be selfless a lot of the time. And I think, for example, this summer, I had 12 trips to Ibiza DJing. I ended up, there was opportunities to probably stay a day or two later to go and watch someone I wanted to see in a club. And I took them and I did that. And sort of towards the end of the summer, I realized that I'd probably taken the piss a little bit, and I should have come back and helped my wife. I'm very hands-on. And I thought when I came back, if I did everything and looked after the baby and was really kind of, did all the night feeds and morning feeds and changed, did everything, that would be fine. But actually, I sort of then realized, it's things like that where, going to DJ is enough. Like, you're going to have to be a bit smarter. Also spending time with her, how my diary was, it's quite hectic. The way I do things, I like chaos. But I had to factor in time to make sure I see her, make sure I was there to support Chloe, make sure I was there to be a good dad. So that's really juggled stuff. It hasn't made me want to change my career. I want to obviously keep DJing and performing, because that's taken a much bigger role now since I was on the podcast last time. I hadn't had any music out, I don't think, or I maybe had one track out. I've got 8 out at the moment, and I've got one coming out in 3 weeks, one coming out, well, it wouldn't depend on when this podcast comes out, but they're sort of all spread out, so I've got a good sort of release schedule coming into the new year. But I'm obviously still doing all the speaking gigs and the podcast, and I'm going to France for the World Cup, DJing out on a cruise ship over there. But I obviously make sure now that if I can come home, I do come home, and I make sure that I will always try, and even if it breaks me, I'll always be there to make sure I can wake up. Like this morning, I went out last night, and I was up with Bo this morning at 6:30, had her until the nanny came, so we can go off to work. And then when I come back on Monday, I'll have her every morning, so Chloe can sleep in,
Do you think it's changed your focus?
It doesn't change away from what I want to do, but it's given things a much, much different perspective, because, you've got this little thing that's dependent on you. You obviously want to be the best version of yourself for her. You want her to, the world's a bit of a difficult place. And I think, like, as you're an adult, you get through that, you realize that it's not all fun and games. I mean, I look at her and, she's playing in a little kitchen thing, and that's the hardest, that's the hardest thing a day gets. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? When she cries, when she's hungry, as an adult, you're always presented with drama and issues and things that blindside you and everything else. And I want to try to protect her for as long as I can from that. So in terms of focus, I've now changed it to make sure that she's front and center of everything, and to make sure that I do everything so I can be, as successful. And also, I need to have my identity. I think where parents go wrong, and at times they lose their identity because of their children. I still need to work. I still need to enjoy myself, and derive pleasure from it. But I also, she has to be the primary focus, and I need to make sure, can I see her? When can I see her? What can I do? Is she okay? And also support Chloe, because, her life has changed drastically. Mine has changed, but not to the extent that it changes for women. And you can understand why there's often a little bit of resentment or a little bit of anger when men just carry on doing what they're doing, And I think there's been a little bit of that,
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. It's the reason why I ask is because it's really interesting. It's for me that I've seen through friends where they have kids, especially in the industry, it's either like turns them super like hyper-focused into making the career work because they have somebody else to provide for, or they just go off the rails and just are like, music's not actually worth the hassle of what it brings to my life to give up the time to spend with their kids, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you can understand that. And I think, you know, like I said, this was the first summer, you know, since I retired, really, where, you know, I'd got an opportunity to go to Ibiza. I got to, you know, to watch DJs I wanted to watch, and I probably pushed it. And I then had the, you know, I tried to always have kind of self-awareness, and I probably sat down. I was like, you know what? I need to change that, because, you know, if I was solely into music, and hopefully the more I progress, DJing will take over, and I will, you know, and you know how difficult it is, lack of sleep, travel, everything else. I think it just means you have to focus on being smarter and much more organized and make the right decisions at the right time. And remember that it's a business. It's not a jolly. And I think that, you know, that's the most important part. And as I said, I changed my mindset to go, right, if I can come home, I will come home.
Yeah.
You know, and that if I go and DJ, you know, I'll go and play, and then next morning next afternoon I'll get a flight home. I won't stay. I won't do this. And it's the same thing with looking at how I'm now, you know, keeping full days free in the week, whereas I've never done that before. You know, going, right, that's blocked off. That's a day just for my daughter.
Yeah.
And that, I think, and ultimately it makes you more organized, more professional, more ruthless. It's always going to make you better, because you then start making better decisions and turn down things you shouldn't have done anyway, and things that are distractions, and choose the right gigs at the right time. And then we'll be, you know, I'm away for 4 days now. You know, that's not, you know, I'm going to miss her. That's not great, because every time you are away, you come back and she, you know, she's grown, or she's something, you know, it's difficult. I never had a kid, and I can never understand all the players who were like, you know, pining for home. You know, I'm not that bad, because I'm quite good at kind of changing focus. And if I'm into it, I can compartmentalize really well because of what I did as a sportsman. But there are times when Chloe will send me a picture of her and you start missing and you're like, oh, I just want to go home.
Yeah.
But I've got a job to do, and that's how I earn my money, you know?
Yeah, it's super interesting, because my manager, he has two kids now. But from like, he won't mind me saying this, but they would never planned and never kind of had a desire to have kids in the first place when I first met both him and his wife. And then they decided that they wanted a kid, had a kid in lockdown. And like, he loves going away he loves coming on tour. He loves a party and all of that. But then like, when I've spent longer time with him, like away, like he definitely misses his family. And like, yeah, definitely. And like, for somebody that never wanted kids, like,
that's,
it's
like me,
it's crazy.
I didn't want kids. Well, yeah. No, I didn't want kids. I wasn't asked about kids. Yeah. I was so selfish. And that, you know, I knew. So I've been around 40 lads every year for 20 years who had children. And I'd seen the best, the worst. I'd seen the ups and downs, the sadnesses, the amazingness of it all. And I knew what to expect. You know, I think a lot of parents go into kind of, you know, I'm very practical, so I kind of live in the moment. And, you know, but I knew it was going to be difficult. I knew that there'll be a lot of fear around her hurting herself or being ill or whatever, you know. And then, did I want to take that on? You know, did I want to selfishly have to give up what I was doing to, you know, to put someone else forward? You know, and I was like, I didn't. Some people have kids to fix relationships. Some people have kids because they want to. Some people have kids because they think it's going to fill a hole. And some people, you know, I didn't need any of that. And when we sat down and talked about it, I think what Chloe was the same. I actually felt it was a shame not to, because I think, you know, she would have been a great mum. I knew that I was, you know, hopefully being a really good dad. And I think that it was ultimately a waste not to do it.
Yeah.
And that if we had the choice, which a lot of people don't have and don't get, and it gets taken away from them. And I understand, I can only talk about my context to it, that we ended up, we're lucky, and we had the, you know, the best little daughter you could ever imagine. All I wanted was a little girl as well. I want a healthy baby. And if I'd had a boy, it would have been great. But I wanted a girl. I was like, I wanted something that wasn't like anything I'd had in my life before. You know, I went to all boys prep school, all boys boarding school, all boys rugby career. I didn't need another element of masculinity. I didn't need a little boy looking at me and going, I want to be like that. So now I've got something that's just so sweet and cute. And, you know, she just runs around screaming at me and that comes in and just gives me a hug and then runs off and gives me a kiss and goes, you know, it's just, and it's moments like that where, I mean, I've cried more in the last year than I have ever in my entire life, because, you know, everything's just an emotional roller coaster, and there's just so much stuff. You know, the first time she said dad, like she came downstairs the other day, I went, hello. And she went, hello. And I started laughing. She started laughing with me. And I was like, oh my God, I'm crying again. What is going on?
That's cute though. You've mentioned the word selfish a couple of times already in 10 minutes. What? Explain this.
So I think it's because my wife told me, so it's that ingrained. it's like PTSD. It just comes out. I basically, what I mean by that is I think I'm very career driven. So one of the things I do is I've written a few books on different subjects. The last one I wrote was called Approach Like Caution, was about kind of mindset and managing mental health or whatever it might have been. And one of the things I talk about, and I always offer people advice and stuff, and I always try to have a self-check-in, you know, because my dad always told me, you can lie to everyone else, but you can't lie to yourself. And there's that moment where you switch off social media, your phone, WhatsApp goes off, and you lay in bed at night just before you want to sleep, and you have this honest moment where you know whether you're happy, whether you're actually okay, or you know, are you an alcoholic? Are you a drug addict? Are you doing too much? Whatever it might be, are you unhappy with you? Are you gay? Or whatever it is that you might not, anyone else know, it's in your head. And I always check in with myself and go, look, am I full of shit? Because I offer advice, I talk to people, where am I at the moment? And things like the other day, I was having a bit of a tricky time, and I was like, you know, I'm often telling people to go and get help, and I hadn't spoken to a therapist for 4 or 5 months, 6 months actually. So I then called up, booked into some, see someone. And so I just tried to have self-awareness. So I know I'm selfish because I, obviously put myself first to try and achieve things. You know, I'm ruthless in the pursuit of trying to be successful. I was ruthless as a player, and I'm ruthless now in terms of wanting to, I will do whatever it takes to get what I want in terms of not in some sort of weird Machiavellian way. I'm not like murdering people, but I kind of very determined. And I also think, I take care of myself. I think of myself first in certain situations. And I think I had to be programmed to be less selfish. And obviously with a kid, that's come out. And I think it's not selfish in a sort of a brattish way. It's just selfish in like a single-minded, I know what I want. I know how to get it. And I'll leave no stone unturned on the pursuit of it. So that's kind of what I mean by it.
I think there's also for me, I can only speak for myself, but there's also like a level of that, of needing to be like that to get anywhere in a career. And I don't mean that you have to be a dickhead to be selfish. No. Like, it's just purely like working out what actually is the right way to kind of take the path of the career and the right way to what's best for you. And realistically, yes, it sounds selfish, but like, it doesn't really matter about anybody else, especially in this industry. For me, is what I've worked out over the years, is like your mate can be the biggest artist in the world, and there's still space for you to be the biggest artist in the world.
Yeah,
like there's space for everybody, but everybody's journey is different, everybody's career is different. Like, yes, you might get paid the same, you might have the same amount of streams, but still everybody's fans are different. Just the way people talk is different, the way people write music is different. And I think that's the thing, is where you can also use the word selfish, purely because nobody else can be you and you can't be anybody else. So it's like the only way to be the best you is to make sure that you're doing what you fucking want. At the end of the day,
I think as well, I think you've hit nail on the head. Like, people associate the word selfish with a negative. I think you're right. When I mean I'm selfish, that doesn't mean I'm not, that doesn't mean I'll throw other people under the bus, or I'll be a dickhead, or I mean that in purely as a tool to be successful. I think everybody who has ever achieved anything is single-minded. So, single-minded is probably more of a more palatable term than selfish, because when people say selfish, it has negative connotations. I mean just centered focused. That achievement, but being respectful. And also, because I think I told you about this before, or so I think there's only a few things that you can control in life, and we get caught up with worrying about a lot of things we can't control, like especially in the music industry, like looking at other people's streams. I want this, I want that, I want that. The only things you can control are how you treat your body, so whether you look after it, whether you train, whether you don't train, whatever it is, how you treat your mind, so whether you develop it, progress it, look after it, how hard you work, and how you treat people. And that's all I go back to if I'm ever a bit lost or whatever I'm doing, is I go back to focusing on them, and then I then retain some control over what I'm trying to do. And if I ever sit down and I'm like, you know, I'm not where I want to be, or I'm not DJing the clubs I want to, and I'm not making music, and I'm not this. And I ask, if any of the answers to those questions is, could I be doing more?
Yeah.
It's my fault. So shut up, come up with a plan, get on with it. And that's what I mean by that kind of, you know, that centered approach.
It's really tough when we live in an industry, when we work in an industry. And it's probably, tell me if it's the same with rugby as well. I'm pretty sure it is. But when a lot of your business success is based on numbers and based on winning, right? Like, if your record does 1 million streams in the first month, you're winning, right? If your record does 5,000 streams in a month and your average is 1 million a month, like, you're losing, right? If you're on a 10 game win streak and then you lose the next 10, you're losing. Yeah. And it's very hard to bring that back down to earth when and kind of bring it internally. I guess the difference is rugby is a team sport, so it's not just based on you. Can you spread that out, or is it different to music? Because, like, you've done both. Is it different?
Look, I think, again, the sports thing, look, so much of it is down to, like, interpretation. I think sometimes, you know, it's numbers based and it's very abstract and it's intangible. Like you said, you know, what is a measure of success? You know, if you have 1 million, 2 million, 10 million streams, you know, you're going to make some money, but, you know, maybe it's on a song that you didn't like that's put you on a completely different direction. There's always stuff that, there's always caveats to all of it. I would always say that I always go back into kind of a loop of kind of like, you know, I sort of look at a situation and go, right, you know, did I do everything I can do to make this a success?
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. And obviously I would probably put processes in place. Same thing with sport, but same thing with me. Did I work with the best engineers? Was I creative? Did I put work in? You know, did we PR it? Did I get the best PR people? Did I plug it on social media? Did the graphics look at whatever it might be? And then, you know, did I try to get the exposure for it? And then if you've done all that and it doesn't go where you want it to go, then you have to just shake it off. It's not, you know, but if you know that there was an element of that you didn't do, then you can start being despondent. You know, if something doesn't catch, there's a lot of times there's no rhyme or reason why one song does better than others, and why something catches the zeitgeist of what's going on versus something else. The same thing with sport, you know, like if you're losing, but you are doing everything you can do to win, and bear in mind there's 14 other players on the field and you've got 14 other people with their own mindset. If I go into a team thing, all I did was worry about myself, and I was like, I'd split the week up into areas that I control. And I think that sometimes people, like I used to, when I started DJing, I was like, I don't know, I know I want to DJ. I know it's possible for me to DJ, but I don't really know how to set about doing it. And then, you know, if you say, I want to be a DJ, it's quite difficult if you've never done it before. So I broke it down to like, well, first of all, I need to learn the technical side. So I went and found a course and I found someone that could teach me. And then I found other DJ teachers off the back of it. And then I was like, well, what else do I need to have a DJ? Well, I need to make music. So I went on and did a production course. And then I did two more production courses. And then I started to work with different people. And, you know, suddenly, each one of those areas, say, covers 10%, I'm suddenly 30% better and 30% closer to where I wanted to be. And that big idea doesn't sound such a bad idea or such a big idea anymore. It seems much more manageable. And I think that's the same thing with nutrition and sport. You know, people want to get healthy, but they just give up because they don't know how to get there. Whereas if you just got out of bed, looked at maybe got a trainer or looked at a training program online and stuck to it, if you don't know anything about nutrition, look on the internet, look on Google, look on YouTube, learn a bit about protein, carbs, fats, and whatever it might be. And, you know, what's your sleep like? What's your recovery like? And if you look at sleep, like, what's your mattress like? What's your room like? You suddenly, there's always a bit that you can manage that you can make a difference to. And I think that's why I never, you know, success, I never get too excited or too down. I just kind of sit in the middle. And if I do get down, I do the analysis like we've talked about, and go, why, you know, have I got any right to be down? And if I haven't, or if I have, then it's my fault and I can't really say anything about it, so I need to get on with it. And if I get too excited, I remember that, you know, it's important to celebrate that moment and to enjoy it, but don't get carried away because you've got to go again. But I think, well, sometimes when I was playing, I never celebrated the moments because I was always on to the next thing. I was always so focus on the next job that meant that, you know, one day I was 17, next minute I was 35, I retired, and I was always trying to get better. And so now I'm making music. When my track played, you know, got first played on Kiss, I bought a 4-bottle of champagne and I danced around the room because that was a moment. Yeah. Now, is it where I wanted to be? You know, is it playing on Pete Tong? Is it Danny Howe playing it? No, yeah. But it's a start. And so is it a success? Well, yeah, I started from nothing and I got a song on the radio and I went, you know, so I think that's why I always try to measure those success in different ways. And I think in this industry, it's very fickle. It's very, you know, especially when you look at the music industry's progression, DJs who weren't front and center, then were front and center. Then it was all about the mixing and the tracks. Now it's about the hype, being seen in the right place. Yes, the music's still, it plays a massive role, and you see the people who are consistent, who keep bringing that sound, and you know there's so many bits and pieces to it. But you can have instant fame, and does that really qualify success? You know, I think there's, you know, I know 220 Kid, he's a lovely guy. You know, he did that Sea Shanty remix, there's like 220 million streams or whatever it is. You know, I think would he do it again if he'd done it? Because I think it put him into a different bracket where he's now fighting to come back out of it, and so. You know, you would say on surface that's winning, but then is it not in other areas? So I think it's something to be really to worry about your side of the street, and also worry about what you find successful, and don't look at other people. Like, look at other people for inspiration, but just look at your side of the street. And that's why I always talk about people not casting judgment or not having, you know, comments or bullying people on social media, because just look at your side of the fucking street. Because if it's an absolute shit tip, you know, you haven't got a leg to stand on, so worry about yourself. And it's the same thing with, what does success mean for you? And success mean for you might mean that you get to DJ 3 days a week, you get to come back to your studio, you get to spend time on a farm, and that is success. Now, someone else might look at that and go, well, he's not doing as much as he wants, but that's not there. It's your success, you know?
How do you get to that point in your life where you can see that for yourself, though? Because I think it's easy said than done, right? It's easy for us to sit on our high horse, like we've both have a level of success in careers, and I'm just saying that not in personal life, but in career we have a level of something that people would look up to, right? How do you get to that point where you're at, where you can process that? Because I can massive where you were saying about not necessarily enjoying the journey whilst you're there, it's like literally I played Red Rocks last weekend, and whilst I was DJing I was like, how the fuck do I headline this? And it's like, don't, it's not saying that I didn't enjoy it. I loved it. It was a great experience, but it's that thing in my head that is like, there's still so much further to go. And it's like, and it's like,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
How have you got to that point? Like, what's the process, and like, what work have you done to get to that point?
So firstly, that's perfect natural. Like, you know, you played Red Rocks, which is an unbelievable venue. And you know, if I said to you 10 years, and I don't know if you played it before or not.
No, first time.
Right. If I said to you 10 years ago you'd play Red Rocks, you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah,
and they've got there, and the first thing you sat there is like, I want more. So I think that's a recipe for success. That's how you are successful, because you want more. But you have to catch yourself in that mind, and you know, and a lot of it is controlling your thoughts in terms of. So when I was playing, I used to be very insecure around my playing ability. I always used to, you know, worry about making mistakes, fear of mistakes. So I would think in my head a lot about making mistakes, and missing tackles or dropping catches or fucking things up, and even DJ making, you know, switching the wrong deck off or doing something else. But your mind doesn't know whether you've done it or hasn't done it. So. Yeah. you know, they put a load of prisoners in prison. What's that? Prison. Prisoners were obviously in prison, and they couldn't play golf. And they basically made them all visualize every day playing golf. And when they came back out, all their handicaps had improved by some of them, but drastically, because your mind can't tell whether you've done it or not. So with that mindset, if you're thinking about negative thoughts, you're kind of almost laying the foundation for it. So a therapist taught me to stop and correct the thoughts. If I thought about missing a tackle, I'd stop and imagine myself making the tackle and how good that felt. But knowing that I'd done it before and what it felt like, even from the shoulder contact on the legs to the smell of the grass to how it felt, because the more I could make it believable, the more my mind would embed that thought. And so, you know, a lot of times when you got to catch yourself when you think that, and you've got to go, yeah, I want more. There's a lot of journey, but fuck me, this is a big moment, and enjoy it. And I think you've also got to remember that what we'll discover whenever we leave this earth is that it was all about the journey in the first place, and that you never get to where you want to be, and there isn't anything else. And actually, it's all about the interactions you have with people, the experiences, the sensory things that you have, and that's what counts, because you'll never reach your goal. Because, you know, I give you $1 million, you'll want 10 million quid. I give you, you know, you want to headline Red Rocks, you're going to want to play arenas, and then I gave you arenas, you're going to want to do, you know, something else. And because there's already somebody doing what you want to do better than you. So that's why you always have inspiration, but you never make it. And I think it's important to have that. It's important to have goals, but you have to find satisfaction. And I was not satisfied for a long period of time because I always wanted more. I would always, you know, I'd do something good, but I wanted something more. You know, I went on the Lions tour, but I didn't get to start a test. You know, so I don't feel like I was necessarily a Lion, but there's other people who didn't get anywhere near a Lion. So now I look back after retiring, I'm like, I'm a Lion. You know, I did that. That's fine. And I should be satisfied with it. So I think a lot of the stuff that I talked about has come out of seeing a sports psychologist since I was 17 to the other day, you know, and I think talking, and one thing I'm always acutely aware of, and I've got friends who do this, there's people in the public eye who read stuff. You can read, I can read a self-help book now and regurgitate it as like borrowed wisdom to you, and it would sound great. But if it doesn't sink in, you don't believe it, you don't practice it, then you're just repeating shit that doesn't make sense. And we live in a world of the internet where people just repeat shit all the time or come up with like wisdom. I do these things. Do you know what I mean? I you know, I spend some time visualizing what it feels like to perform in, you know, one in a DJ set. You know, I fucked up I had spinal surgery. I mean, that's how long ago. I don't know. It must be 3 years ago we did a podcast, maybe. I don't know how long you've been doing it for. It was a while ago, but I had to have that spinal surgery, and I got an opportunity to DJ with Simon Dunmore, and then Bob Sinclair jumped on at Cafe Mambo's, right? And I was on morphine because I couldn't really stand up straight, but they asked me to do it, and I was like, I'm never turning this down. And I was having this mega build. I was playing this Darius Sarossian track, like skipping along. It's wicked. And I was going to backspin off another deck, and I turned the wrong deck off. Because I had two decks, what I normally do is I have two decks on one side, one on the other, and I always mix from one side to the other, so I don't do that. So even if I'm playing that, I can always go, so I know which side it is.
Yeah.
Because I was on one side, he was on one side, I wasn't used to doing it, and I just stopped the wrong thing. I obviously started it again, but I was like, fuck, I've just ruined it. I've just literally fucked it. And, you know, I love Simon. Simon's amazing, but he's quite... You know, he doesn't give a lot, Simon. And I want an arm around him. Bob was great. Bob was like, oh, I was just a little mistake. Don't worry about it. We rolled on. No one gave a fuck. But I wore that for days. I was like inconsolable afterwards. I was like, this is shit. I bought a fucked up. I'm awful now. And it brought me back to the times when I was a player that I'd made mistakes or done things. And I had to use all the tools that I'd learned to get over it again. And I went and started doing some self-analysis. But because I then did what I did when I was a player, and I started looking at comments online, people were like, oh, you couldn't mix a fucking cup of tea. all this shit. Doesn't matter how invincible you start, it starts to bleed into you. So
where does that come from on a deeper level, though?
Oh, I think I'm probably just a bit of I was doing a podcast the other day, and I kind of heard what the guy said, but kind of more, not soft, but just kind of like I'm more sensitive. I'm more sensitive than you perhaps I would think I would be. And I think I had my dad was amazing, and my dad is amazing, and I love him, but he's very critical. To help me, but that's how he, you know, how he operated. And so I probably didn't deal with criticism very well. I take criticism quite badly. I've had to then spend a lot of my career, you know, putting things in place to manage that. So, you know, I'm good now, a lot of stuff. But for example, my Achilles heels, because I'm so desperate to be good at DJing, if people criticize me for that, because I love it, I still wear that a bit. Now I've got better, that I don't give a shit to people online say anything. But if you were to say, watch me and go, fuck me, how's your crap? I'd be like, oh God, you know, Will's like, you know, one of my peers, one of my idols here, you know, that's cut me deep. But what I was trying to say in a roundabout way with all this is that I have to work very hard at all this stuff, and everything that I've said to you on this call, I do on a daily basis and practice it. And that's how you build that up, because, you know, people read self-help books, they get motivated, which is the most dangerous thing in the world, and then they don't do any of the work, and then they move on to another self-help book and they don't get anywhere. Motivation is awful. Fuck motivation off. You need resilience, and you develop resilience through things like using negativity. So say, for example, you know, you felt like you should be playing Red Rocks headlining. You're like, next year I'm going to prove these motherfuckers, and you go and double down, you make more music, you do everything, you dominate, and that's how you do it. Or you go, I want to play a headline Red Rocks, and you go competition. Well, he's done that. I'm going to have competition. I'm going to be better than him. And then you do it, you know, and then you sort of look at it and going, right, well, I've got, I can look at past memory. So I know that if I do this, this will lead to me being a headline in Red Rocks. And so you dip into different kind of almost buckets of things you use to get you up in the day. And that's how you build your resilience. And that's kind of what I do with all this stuff, really. And you know, I have to revisit it, and I get it wrong all the time, and I have moments, but I can always come back to kind of a checklist in my head if I'm lost a bit of what to do. And that's how you develop this stuff. And that's how, after a period of time, you start almost doing it by, you know, not even thinking about it. Yeah. But it is something you have to think, because when you do like a lot of corporate people, if any corporate people listen to your podcast, no doubt they've had a team building person that comes in and they write like success on a whiteboard and everyone goes like, what, why, and how, and everyone chimes in, everyone goes, yeah, it's amazing, and they leave and they never look at any of it again. So excellence is something you have to revisit every day. All the things I've told you have to do every fucking day. It's like training. If you don't train, you get out of shape. You have to do it. And you're like, but surely I've trained enough now. Doesn't my body know to stay? It's like, no, you have to do it every day. And if you want to be better at something, you have to do it every day. And all these behaviors, you have to revisit. And the people who do revisit it, or do it, people do it by subconsciously, some people do it anyway, are the ones that are successful. And you always, if you look at billionaires' books and super successful people, you know, there aren't miracles. It's hard work. It's working smart. It's doing what other people aren't prepared to do. It's reaching out for help. It's, you know, it's looking after your mind. It's being, you know, critical and self-analytical and all these bits and pieces. And it's every time you fuck up, you don't worry about it. You get up and go again, you know, because someone gave me a great analogy that when you have an artist, you only ever see the final picture hanging on the wall. You don't see the 50 sketches crumpled up in the bin. You only ever see the end product, and the mistakes are what makes you better. If you can see it like that. So if I fucked up on that thing with Bob's, it then made me look at how I was DJing and what my setup was like and why, and how do I stop that happening again. And I used it as a tool, and I went, right, well, you know, my mixing was on point. What did I do wrong? How can I not make sure that doesn't happen? So every time on my rider or whatever, when I mix, I now know not to do that. And I just took a learning from it. And I moved on. And so, you know, eventually that's the way you got to operate all the way, I think.
I guess the thing that I want to push back on that, and I totally agree with everything you say, but when you convert things into the music industry, I'd like to hear it from both sides, because you were in both. You were an athlete and you, now you're in the music world. But how different that is with maybe not even on the athlete side of things, but like on business side of things. Like you said, you put this much work in and you get this much out, right? It can be exactly the same in music to a certain extent. However, there's massive gatekeepers in the music industry that doesn't necessarily care about how hard you work, right? How do you deal with that? Because I know you and I have spoke about it in situations. It's like what people think of you is what people, your perception, like all of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I came up, you know, when I came to the farm and, you know, we sat and we made, you know, the tracks coming out, keep on. And, you know, we did that time together. We, you know, I played you 10 tracks and you loved, you know, eight of them or whatever. And you're like, brilliant. You're like, how are these not signed? I was like, because the feedback of somebody is you're just not cool enough. You know, we're just not looking, you're just not the right face. And so that's really frustrating, because you, because you're allowing as a human element. So then it doesn't matter how hard you work. It doesn't matter if you're doing it. You're always a gatekeeper. Like you said, you're right. But the point is, with any of this stuff, is, you know, there's lots of there are ways around all of it. And actually, I think, for example, the music industry, I wanted to get some stuff on DFTD, and I'm getting knocked back all the time, and I just was like, you know what? I'm just going to go away and keep making music. I'm going to double down on what I'm going to do, and I'm going to get, they're going to come to me.
Yeah.
My mindset, they're going to come to me. I'm going to keep releasing music, and I'm going to keep doing that. And, you know, it might not be where I want to be, but I'm going to get there. And by the end of it, my sound and what I want to make and how I want to do it is going to mean that people are going to want music from me. And that's kind of the way I do it. So then you, because you don't control that person, and you can spend your whole life trying to control that, or trying to exert control over the gatekeepers, you ain't going to do it. No. So what can you control? Well, you can put yourself in the best possible position for them to want to sign the music. You can, you know, charm them, treat them, whatever. You can do all that, but you still can't guarantee it. So what can you control? Well, making good music, putting it out there, consistency, and the smartness, and go, look, if they're here, you know, what's a similar label? What's a similar sound? Who is released on that? What can I do? And be more ruthless in that mindset, I think, you know, because that's what I've done. I've gone, you know, I've got some management now with Red Light Management. I didn't have that before. And I was like, you know, I was getting frustrated. I was trying to push music, and I was like, well, management, what, you know, that's an easy win. Why not try and do that? And then, you know, I've got labels that I want to release on, that where I want to get to, but I, at the moment, they wouldn't touch me, or I'm getting knocked back. So then I go, well, what's the next step? So where's the next sound? Where's the consistency come from? And I think, and I've seen, if you keep knocking on the door and you keep turning up, and like you said, you're a good person, you're polite, you know, you get an opportunity, you fucking take it, and you work hard, it will come.
Yeah.
And you know what? There might be someone that just hates you, and they'll just never sign a record for you. But I promise you, there are, you know, from what I can see in the music industry, yes, it's all kind of sound dependent. There are some labels you would want versus others, but I can pretty much tell you that, you know, there isn't one label that you get on is going to change your life. What will change your life is consistent, good music. And there are plenty of fish in the sea that if that one won't touch you, then it won't ever touch you. But one day that fucker will leave and you will have heard a whole back catalogue of music here, and you will be so established that I guarantee the new person will be like, why have we not released a Will Clark record here? Well, I don't understand how, you know, he's absolutely killing it. And then you come to you, and do you know what the best day is? You turn around and go, nah, I don't think I want to do it anymore. And then you won the battle. Or you're smart and go, I'm not going to cut off my nose, smile my face. Yeah, I'd love to do it. What can we do? And so I think, for me, that's the only way I can do it, because otherwise you'll go mad. And like the same thing, but the reason it translates with the coaches is that in rugby, you could train the best, be the best player, play the right, but your face don't fit. And if the coach don't want to pick you, I had that in the World Cup 2015. I remember I went into it, was playing some of the best rugby, I was in really good form. I went in and they were always picking Tom Wood and Chris Robshaw, great guys, you know, great players. And I sat on the coach and he started talking to me. I said, listen, let's be honest. I couldn't do any more, could I? He was like, no, you couldn't be playing any better. So you're not picking because it's down to personal preference. I said, yeah. I said, well, fine. I said, don't tell me, don't give me a fucking spurious load of work-ons. Just be honest. And I want you to know that I'll keep doing what I'm doing. And if the opportunity comes and one gets injured, I'm in. He goes, yeah, that's fine. He goes, we trust it more than you. You know, it's not personal. It's just that. I said, fine. I'd rather have that. And then you can manage it. You know, then you can sort of.
It is personal though, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is, but then I can't change their mind. Exactly. And so, you know, you could go mad. I mean, unless you kill them. You know,
I get it, because it's really interesting. I had a conversation with my manager last night, and we were just doing like an agent kind of catch up, and yeah. I was like, how's Fran, my Spanish agent, going? And he's like one of the best agents in Spain. And he's like, yeah, he's really struggling with doing work for you. He's like, there's just zero demand for you. I said, is it the fact that Fran's not doing the right job, or is it the fact that there's no demand for me in that area? And Ryan was like, my manager was like, there's just no demand. And if that happened to me 4 years ago, I would have just like been like gone in on myself and just been like, yeah, mate, I'd be fucking depressed about that. But like yesterday, I was just like, oh, fair enough. I get it.
Because the thing is, you can't look.
You can't control then, it. You can't control the situation. It,
I think you can look back at it. So then what I would say is with him, manager, I go, okay, look, I understand that. If there isn't, and it can't magic up. Is that area you know, somewhere where you want to play. And so, you know, if it's playing with Ibiza and all their best, if you want to do more stuff there, and because obviously it's got a big techno sound, you know, if that's what I do, what is it you got to do to make it happen? And yeah. then give yourself four things you could be doing more, and then you retain control again. And that's how you do it. You know, I don't think you should be ever asked about it, because people don't want to demand, but you're playing everywhere else. And you kind of know you're making great music. You're playing all out. You know, you've got America on lockdown. You're backs and forwards all the time. You know, that in itself is a massive achievement. I'd go to them and go, what is it I need to do? And, you know, is it I need to release on some Spanish labels? Is it I need to, you know, go there and get it, you know, video it and hype it up? Or do I need to, you know, take some earlier slots on some opening slots or some shit I wouldn't normally do? Whatever plan they came up with, go and execute it. And then, you know, and see if it's still no demand, then the Spanish fucking just don't want Will Clark.
So this is the thing, is there's also like a level of like, especially in for me in music, and it might sound arrogant, but it's not coming from an arrogant point of view, but it's like I'm not willing to change my sound to just gig, and that's I'm fine. Not willing to sign a record on a record label just to get on that record label. Like for me, that's I used to do that, and it didn't make me happy. What makes me happy is releasing music that I absolutely love and that I can stand by full-heartedly and go, this record is mine, which is why I started a record label. Yeah. It's tough, but then by having that attitude, you then alienate yourself.
I think that's a good thing. I don't think it's good. I think that you know, if you were just starting out and you were on a point where your career was fledgling and you were that set in your ways, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
The point is you've proven your sound is you know, I can hear a Will Clark track and I know your sound, the way you perform, your persona, that's set in stone. You've been at this for a while now. Now you can always get better and you can always develop and always progress. But you don't want to lose yourself pursuing goals that you're not that asked about. And if you know they're not asked about it, then you put your hand up and said, don't worry about it. So I don't think you have to be worried about being like that. I think that's one of the most powerful tools where people can go, I don't want to do anything different. I want to do this. I want to get better at this. I want to play here. And people will either find my sound and like it, or they won't. But I know that people do like it. And I know it's a proven recipe. And I know that I could gig. You could probably know. I mean, I think we spoke about it before. You could gig more, you know, if you know, than you do at the moment. And I think that's, you know, that's down to personal preference. You know, you could probably be out every day if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you have to ever change your identity. Look, do you know what the interesting thing is? You could always come up with like a, you know, an A-list time or whatever, or like a different thing, and see if you could do that, and see if I could be bothered, yeah. Could I actually capture the Spanish market and destroy it under a completely different guise and make a sound, because it's fun making a different sound. You know, if you know what you're making and you're quite uniform about it, and you know, I know you've done this album and all these other bits and pieces, you're kind of going off everywhere. It might be quite nice to do that, and then that in itself, is it me, or is it Spain, or what is it? And that you know, and if you're talented enough as you are, that's what I do.
Yeah, I totally agree. Also, no one knows about the album, so that's an insider.
I'm fine, we'll cancel that one.
It's fine. They know now.
They do know.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. I think there comes a level when you're starting your career that you kind of have to mold into something to start with, unless you're making something that everyone just can't not. Get like they can't get away from, if you know what I mean, like if you're Daft Punk or something like that, like the music's so good that no one can get away from it.
No, I mean, that's the dream, and like, but then that's why you have seminal talents, you know, and that's why you have, you know, they're the perfect crossover of electro music. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They appeal to the mainstream, appeal there, and that, but you know, your tracks like Hallelujah and you know, had captured so many people's imagination, and you play it anywhere, but your sound's never gonna, it's never, you can't, not gonna play, you know, put on like Primetime Cap, it's never gonna be in the top chart, because it's just not that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think you're gonna be comfortable with that. So then your success becomes, you know, it's relative
cap.
To you.
There's a cap, right? There's a cap to it. And I think it's, if you want to undo that cap to go bigger, that you have to compromise your sound.
Yeah.
You have to.
But that's why I think if you're as talented as you are, you can come up with a, you know, a different.
Oh, I lost you. Hello.
Clark. Did we freeze there for a second?
Yeah, you froze there, but we're good. We're back.
I was saying that you know, you could do it under a different alias, and you know, we just, if you shave the beard off, we get a clip on one. So Will Clark, you put it on, and then when you're off, you're like, you know, Davros the Great or whatever it is that then plays different kind of music. And I think that's sometimes obviously what you see with different people. You see it with David Guetta and Jack Back and all these other things. You know, I mean, I just,
yeah, you know, I think for me, there's also a level of, like, I guess with David Guetta and Jack Back, it's a bit slightly different because David Guetta is David Guetta, right?
Yeah.
And realistically, if Jack Back came up and he was a nobody, like, he wouldn't be doing what he's doing as Jack Back.
No.
I guess also for me, there's always been this thing where I'm so focused on one thing, and it's not necessarily the best thing. I don't know if this is the best option, but I'm so focused on one thing that if I focus on another genre, another alias, another something else, like, I've got aliases people don't know about, but also I just don't release that music because it's like, I do that for my own, just for my own, for myself.
Yeah.
But like, in my thing is like, if I start another alias, it has, sounds awful, but there has to be a financial gain from that, because that is purely just to, is business. Like, I can write music all day long and I love it, but the minute I start releasing music for something else, it has to be financially adding to my career, because I'm going to put so much work into it. And it's like, well, what's the fucking point? I don't need
to
do that.
You don't want a distraction. You know, you don't want a sideshow, but that takes away your energy and focus. And I think everything I'm hearing from what you're saying, you know, you've got your sound, you've got your identity, you're not prepared to compromise. You could probably get better in like everybody can in that area. And like I said, you know, going full circle, the thing with the Spanish thing, there are probably three or four things that your management should tell you that you could do that are in your control. The rest of it is completely out of your control. And I wouldn't even worry about it, because at some point, if you did those bits and pieces and were keen to expand, it'll probably help you across the board. And, you know, you might get some keys, but if you don't, at least you tried, and then you can just move on. And that, maybe that market ain't for you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely. What's the plan for the rest of the year for you and next year?
Well, can we talk about this mega track that we've got coming out of your bloody label, please?
Yeah, so 17th of November. Well, it'll be out by the time this comes out. I think this episode comes out the Tuesday after the record's out.
So it's called Keep On. It's so good. I mean, look, it's if you told me I was going to get to release on World Class Label, I would have laughed in your face. And I remember a girl called Carly Wilford, who put me onto you. She's a female DJ, really nice girl. She showed me your first track, and I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And he's great. And then we made contact on social media. We followed each other, and I was playing your music, putting it in my radio shows. And I just loved it. And obviously came out, spent a day with you. We had a lovely meal deal from
Tesco's
meal deal. living it up. But those, and I had those really, really spicy crisps, and like burnt the inside of my mouth. I keep eating sharp, crinkled, spicy crisps. It just like did my inside of my mouth. And we sort of went around there, didn't we? And it was amazing to see it and work with you.
I wasn't on best form that day as well.
Were you not?
Then my studio, like, my writing was not on best form. It took us ages to get through it.
Well, no, but I think it was also, I turned up with a couple of vocal ideas that I wanted to do, and the one we found was that had already been done. I was like, fuck's sake, that long ago. I've done another production course since I saw you with Dean Ramirez.
Oh, cool.
And, and I'm making much more, you know, ideas and stuff myself and building out tracks. And I kind of, again, have much more an idea of what I want and what I like. But Keep On came out of it, and you know, been out for ages, and it absolutely bangs. I can't believe I'm releasing with you, because on that, well, it'd be out now, but who else is on the compilation that's coming out?
So I've got a collab with Denson Pika and myself on it. Dalton Taylor is on it. Clarity's on it. Brux is on it. Vigilante is on it. And Mary Droppins is on it. And they're kind of the label fam, really. Dalton, Brux, Clarity, and Vigilante are like label fam. The Denson Pika record that I did with them in the summer at some point.
Is that the one where you layer 10 kick drums? Is that something else?
Yeah, literally. I went in the studio with Alex from Denson Pika, and I was like, dude, that is just disgustingly gross. And he's like, yeah, it's 10 kick drums. And I'm like, okay, it makes sense why.
I was like, I don't even know how you start doing 10 kick drums. When I've got the most excited I've got is layer two with a click on it on one of them. That's the end of it. But no, look, I think the track's going to do really well. It's obviously amazing. You know, again, look, for me, you know, the win from this is it's a great track that I play in my sets that people absolutely love, that people are going to love. In and amongst a collection of, you know, like you said, label OGs and amazing people in that area, that's a win for me. Now, you know, if it doesn't get millions of streams, that's not. I'd like it to, and I'd like it to kick on, and people go, "Fuck me, this is amazing," and start the journey. Because in my head, that's what's going to happen. People go, "Wow, James is working with Will Clark. He's badass." but for me, the win is I got to make a track with a mate, and I got to play it, and I love it. And that's enough. And to be on a label, I can always, if I was to finish tomorrow, I can, you know, I'm on a lineup with some of the best people in the game. And that for me is a win. And that's what's important.
I think that's the full circle, right? It's the full circle. Yeah. It's what we were talking about earlier. It's the journey. It's like, okay, we've built a relationship up over the last couple of years from when you first came on the podcast to where now we're writing records together and now releasing records together. And now we're second podcast in, we talk on a regular basis, and that's the journey of, for me, what is an amazing thing about this industry is that it can build relationships up with people that you would never even thought that those relationships would ever happen. Like, I'll be honest, like, I was a huge fan of you as a rugby player, if you know what I mean, and then you were a fan of me making music, and now we're mates. And I think that's the thing, is like, this, that's the thing I love about music.
But that's the journey that, you know, the journey that the enjoyment is. The track in itself is an amazing byproduct of me getting to come up, you know, meet your folks, see the house, get on with everyone, you know, have, eat with you, make music, stay in touch and build off the back of it. And I think, you know, that's what's important. And all the music that I've made and stuff is, that's for me where the success and enjoyment comes from. It's the process always. And look, you know, I never understand why, you know, my last track that I did on tour called Coco, you know, it's
wicked
an absolute
record. Wicked record.
Yeah, it got loads of support, but then the streams are shit. And they're like, well, so do I sit there going, I look at it sometimes, I log in, I'm like, oh, come on. But then some of them are slow burns, you know what I mean? Like one of them, I it was slow, and then suddenly pop on, it's got like 300,000. You're like, well, how the hell's that happened?
Yeah.
But it's all part of the journey to helping me achieve what I want to achieve. But it's always sitting with good people, making good music and having good fun and sitting there. And every time I play that song, it makes me smile. Yeah. And I always think of our moment together. And that for me is the win, you know?
Well, I think that's the byproduct of something, right? And stream watching is fucking mind numbing. Like, I've gone through the process of like actually not giving a fuck about streams now. It's taken me so long to get there, but like my latest record is just awfully streamed. Like performing, like literally each record I've released over the last 2 years has got drastically worse on streaming.
Yeah.
However, I've started selling more tickets and selling out more shows and my fees have gone up. Makes zero fucking sense.
But then when you've got to have the objectiveness to go, what's important?
Exactly.
Selling out venues, selling tickets, getting gigs. And actually, I had the same thing. All of my songs have got progressive. The first track I released has been my best ever one.
Yeah.
But it's my least favorite one. One of my least favorite is I don't play it out because it's not my sound. It was something that I made and thought that's what I wanted to do and then realized I didn't because it didn't represent my personality. And every single track now has got to the point where it's what something I would play and reflects my personality. And that for me is important. But they're all getting less and less streams. I'm like, well, it's a progression. This is not great. But I'm front and center much more in making music, you know?
I think it's also a bigger conversation for the music industry, especially the electronic music industry. It's like because it's an issue that everyone's dealing with to a certain extent. It's an issue, not necessarily the big commercial guys or like the John Summits or the Dom Dollars or those guys or like the Peggy Goos and
Fisher. Everything Fisher turns to gold.
Turns to gold. But I think then it's the bigger question of like, how do you introduce interesting people to the scene and keep
the culture of the scene going, but also create an ability for those artists to make money through the forms of streaming. It's a bigger question, and it's a conversation that I don't know is ever going to get resolved at the end of the day, because we all know you make fuck all money from streaming.
And I think, again, it becomes, like you said about those, like John Summit, you know, his story, Deep End, you know, making an account and coming through, you know, but it's interesting because someone told me about, you know, he can sell lots of things in America, but isn't that popular over here. So I wonder if he's popular over here, but, you know, it might have changed, but in terms of sort of selling out venues and bits and pieces, you know, someone tried to tell me that it didn't have that necessary pulling power. Then you see him doing massive bits in America. So I wonder if he sits there going, fuck, I wish I could conquer the UK.
I hope he thinks that, because I think that's the only way we, again, it goes back to what we were saying. It's the only way you grow in your business is to go, okay, this, you put this plus this together and this is the outcome. And especially when you're in a situation like him, like, you have the ability, you have all the resources at your fingertips. It's just whether or not you want to do it.
Yeah. And again, I think with someone like, you know, you look at Fisher's story, you know, he was part of Cutsnake. He couldn't get a record signed for Love Nor Money. Yeah. No one was interested. You know, he came on board, you know, did stuff with Chris Lake. The journey, now everything he releases, a million streams in a day, top of Beatport.
Yeah.
But it's a whole... You know, he's been chipping away at it. It's the whole image thing. It's everything that goes with it. He's obviously a great talent and a crazy guy and a really lovely bloke, you know, that I'm always in awe of. He's such a good guy. But you just see it happen. And I think it the process goes. But if you were to ask him 20 years ago, 50 years ago, when he's a cutsake, do you think he'll be headlining venues and selling out in America and having Beatport number ones? He'd probably laugh in your face. But he stuck to the process. And every time he's had an opportunity, he's delivered. And now he's got to the point where the hype and the fans, they are just ready to lap it up. And whether it's a good song or not, you've instantly got a million people, because once he's got his name attached to it, it's in there. Dom Dollar's heading the same way after, I mean, I know he's always been mega, but Ryan Dust absolutely killed it. His new one, you know, he's with, is it Nelly Furtado?
Nelly Furtado. He's just released another one as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if they're going out or whatever, but you know, like.
I reckon he is. Dom, are you dating Nelly Furtado?
Really, he's got to be.
He's like, got to be. I hope he is.
If he isn't, what an amateur.
I know, right? Terrible. He's doing pulling a Will Clark game.
Yeah, Will Clark. Absolute anti-shag.
Yeah, I was talking about this the other day. I need to text him and ask him.
Yeah.
Maybe ask this podcast. Anybody listening to the podcast, DM him, ask him for us.
Yeah, please message me. Mr. Dollar, are you hanging out at the back of Mrs. Picard just to let us know? Because we need to know this, because like, we all hope you are, because it's not perfect. Like I said, all these people, it is a journey. It is interesting now. I think to be successful, and what's important is the brand.
Yeah.
Now, it's a wank word because purists and music people, but they all have brands and association. And when people buy into a brand, they buy into the streams and they buy into it. And you know, you see people put songs on radios or get radio plays just because it's that person, because they can't not play the latest track from so-and-so because they're so powerful. And I think it's much more important to have pulling power in venues and sets and all that kind of stuff, because then the streams will come.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and it is wanky to say the brand thing, but I totally agree with you, because you look at our culture nowadays, right? And it always has been, but even more so much nowadays. It's like, look at Apple, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is the quintessential brand where people don't buy it because they need it. They buy it because they want it.
Release 15 of the same fucking phone that does nothing else. Probably got 15 and you got a bit more camera. And it's like, well, what's it like? Android phones are doing everything. Android phones can drive your car. Like, you know, they've had face recognition for ages. They do everything. What's Apple do? It's like, it's the same, but it won't overheat. And it's got a new camera. And you're like, oh,
sold.
Cool.
Sold.
Yeah, it's £1,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Sign me up for that. It's just mad. It's like utter mad.
It's like clothes. It's like clothes, right? How many fucking DJs wear Gucci t-shirts? Like, that t-shirt costs more than what you're earning on that gig. Like, fucking sort your life out.
Yeah, I mean, my dress sense wank, but I actually said it, you know, Barrow, the Italian brand, I just found that they were like amazing t-shirts. I know, because obviously that fluorescent stuff, I just love them. And I was like, they are literally half the price of, I was wearing like a Miri t-shirts, like 400 quid. I was like, why the fuck am I doing this? And a Miri, I love it. It's mega, it fits really well for like a bigger gentleman. But mate, it's Barrett. It just, I was like, why am I doing this? You obviously look good in the shirt. And also the idea that you can't ever wear it again. I've worn that and I can't do that again. No, like I wait and I'll cycle them back out again.
Yeah, oh, definitely. How's the training going?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, training's good. I'm sort of, well, I've got a bit of a cough at the moment, so I'm a bit under the weather. I've just started back doing jiu-jitsu, and I'm all over the place. But I'm like, it's about planning routine. So I've now started taking training kit in my car with me. So I've got David Lloyd membership, so I can try and stop and try and make it happen. I get in and out of the gym 45 minutes. Yeah. I don't fuck around. I don't look at my phone. A minute rest in between, and I smash it. The one thing I'm probably not doing as much as I should be is cardio. But I'm trying to get that from the jiu-jitsu because...
It's different cardio, the jiu-jitsu, though.
Yeah, different kind of cardio. Yeah, it is. Different kind of cardio. But, mate, I've got to go. Is that right?
Do it. Yeah, let's wrap it up. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for releasing the record on my label, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, brother. I love you. I love what you're about. Let's conquer Spain. And please, 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 this is this podcast.
Fuck Spain. Fuck Spain.
I'm not saying that. I need Spain.
So do I.
Please check, actually, we apologise.
Yeah, sorry.
Please check out Keep On. It's out. It'll be out now when this podcast comes out. Let me know what you think of it. I'm at James Haskell on social media. It's an absolute belter. And do you know what? We're going to have to go round two. So get the meal deal butt dusted off. Get the good form in. Because if that was on bad form and that track's a belter, imagine what we could cook up.
If
you actually just cared about your old mate and put back on prep in.
Charity case.
Yeah, exactly. Like, wait, you could probably get a tax break by caring the community project with me, but
with the old man.
The old man, exactly.
Mate, have a great day. Keep safe. Send my love to the family. Brother. Big love. Peace.
Thanks, mate. Love you, mate. Bye bye.
You too. Bye. And that's a wrap. Big love to James for coming on. I hope you all had a lovely listening session. Keep safe. Till next time. Please subscribe. Love you lots.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.